Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 4.15, where Michigan finished January 7-0-1. Pretty good. With Michigan's return to Madison for hockey, do you know what else we get a return of?
I don't know. Rafael Nadal winning Grand Slams.
Did he do that last time? I don't think. That was in like October of 20, right?
Yeah.
Last time Michigan. No, that is incorrect, even though it is still correct. It's the return of hockey Jim Brandstatter.
Oh, yeah.
For only one game, though.
Yeah, and the play-by-play guy he was with on Bally Sports Wisconsin or whatever
Wisconsin.
It is,
yeah,
didn't seem like the same guy because the guy last year had a mullet, and this guy didn't look like he's ever had a mullet.
Have you ever had a mullet?
No.
I think maybe when I was a little kid, I had a small one. My hair in the back was longer, but not of substance. I'm not of substance anyway. So with Jim Brandstatter, first of all, he sounds just like Jim Brandstatter. Like, if you would have told me or you it was him, I probably just would have accepted that.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And then building on that, we also got some of the widest array of mispronunciations of Michigan hockey players.
Well, we've now gotten to the like pinnacle of the most Brendan Brisson different names, right? There's the like extremely French Brisson, then right. There's Brisson,
yeah,
where like the S-O-N rhymes with zone basically. Brisson. I mean, it's a mess every week.
And we had Brisson this week.
This week was Brisson, yeah.
Yes.
With the no French, just rhymes with zone.
Like the winner of all is still, I believe, it was when they went to Penn State, I think, and we got the Portillo.
Portillo, yeah, that one.
That
is.
Was, and they actually had to put his name in the pronunciation guide
for the first time. We've also gotten Bord Low.
Bord Low, yeah.
With no vowel in the middle there.
It's just a dash in between two words. But this week we got Truscott,
which
was almost like he's
musket.
Or like about to be dipped in peanut butter, eaten like a cracker.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the very ending, the last one was Van Wee, which was, I mean, he's been around. This is the fourth year at least, which I think he's eligible to come back next year because of the COVID year. So we may even have another shot with him, but I don't ever remember anyone messing it up like that. Van Wee?
Yeah, that one is pretty new that I can remember. I mean, I remember it was one year Michigan softball was playing at LSU when we got Megan Bobian.
Well, but I mean, that's at LSU, right? So now all of a sudden that just opens up a whole new door. Like, this would be like if Michigan played University of Quebec or something, right? Like, you would all of a sudden now, like, Brisson would go crazy. But yeah. You wouldn't expect this to happen in, say, Madison, Wisconsin?
Different broadcasters just like to do different things and run with it for the most part.
So I think the only thing that would have made this better is if you would have had Brian Cook be the play-by-play guy with Jim Brandstatter as the analyst. We would have no idea who is doing what. Anyway, so hopefully you got to experience that game because unfortunately it was on BTN Plus for all of those outside of the radius of Bally Sports Wisconsin.
It's not really on BTN Plus because it's a professional TV broadcast. It's just being brought to you on BTN Plus.
Sure.
So the production value was drastically better.
But if you're outside the cable reaches of that regional station, it's pretty much BTN Plus or Al Randall on the radio.
Yeah, basically.
Now that you have surrendered the play-by-play duties of Michigan hockey from YouTube. Anyway, as all right, well, as fun as that was, we should touch on a more serious note. There was a report or piece of paper leaked regarding Michigan hockey this week. We're not really going to touch on it in depth because there's not a ton of specifics to say yet, but you had some quick takes just so that everyone is aware that we're aware of it and not ignoring it, but not going to comment in detail until I guess something more of substance appears.
So I woke up Saturday morning and lots of people on Twitter were talking about allegations within the Michigan hockey program. This refers to an article published in MLive Saturday morning relating to a letter that they have gotten their hands on. The letter is from a law firm called WilmerHale Law Firm in Washington, D.C., which followers of Scandal may remember, they are the ones who investigated the Dr. Robert Anderson situation back in the spring, and they have been hired again, according to the letter. The letter is from WilmerHale to an anonymous person, basically saying, "Hello, we've been hired to investigate allegations that you filed with the University of Michigan's Equity, Civil Rights, and Title IX office," and the letter details the four things that were filed with that office, which are in order: Pearson and Director of Hockey Operations Rick Bancroft discriminated against female staffers and created a quote toxic work environment for female support staff. Number two, Pearson retaliated against a student athlete for quote raising concerns about the hockey team's culture. Number three, Bancroft knew about sexual misconduct committed by Robert Anderson, which is presumably why WilmerHale is the law firm being hired here. And then number four, that Michigan coach Mel Pearson instructed the team to lie about COVID contact tracing forms in the lead up to the NCAA tournament. So those are the four things. They are not really connected in many ways besides the person. People that they implicate, notably Bancroft and Pearson. We don't have any additional details other than that. This letter that MLive got their hands on was very brief. And so at the moment, we don't really have anything else to sort of dig into. The letter is from October 28th, 2021, meaning that presumably, the investigation has been going on for 3 months now.
Or more.
Something in that range, yeah, somewhere around there, depending on when WilmerHale was actually hired. So they have presumably been digging into this, and you have to imagine that obviously Pearson, but also many of the players have known about this for a while, and yet they are continuing to play. So draw your conclusions there. We have speculative takes, but those are not useful to be shared on a podcast of this nature. You and all of our listeners and everyone else have probably have takes, you know, but right now it's not really a productive use of time to share those in public forums, and we don't really have any details. So we like to talk about things that have hard evidence right now, and there's no real hard evidence until a report is released. So that's sort of the end of what we can really talk about in any substantive matter.
So should we begin speculating on the games now?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess the first note is going into Friday is no Owen Power and no Kent Johnson because they were headed to a pre-Olympic camp, I guess, in Switzerland. Is that correct?
Yeah, Thomas Borrelo's homeland.
Yeah, which we found out about between like what the first and second period. They had a whole thing in Bally Sports Wisconsin about it.
And I think that was last week.
Or was it last week? All
Yeah.
these games are blurring together. All right,
Yeah.
so in Minnesota, same
Yeah.
thing. They'll love that.
Yeah, Johnson and Power at the Canadian camp. I'm not sure why that's in Switzerland. I guess it's halfway to China or something, but normally you
Suppose
fly.
if you go that direction.
Yeah, normally you fly the other way. But regardless, yeah, they're there and they were not at this game, which we found out midweek, actually, like right after I had published my hockey column. And then everyone in the comments are yelling about how Power and Johnson won't be there. And I was like, well, that news just got published. So
Yeah, I don't know why
Too
you
late
didn't write a whole thing about it. That's,
too
I
late
think
to
that's
talk
on you.
about that. But yeah, that's the unfortunate note, but it didn't really seem to affect anything.
No, and that was kind of, I mean, we've had, again, private takes about both of these players where while they are good players and certainly going to not only be putting up points and contributing to Michigan successes as they have, we have probably higher takes on other players that we're glad that stayed in certain ways, or I guess more on defense. And we saw this weekend, it's a perfect segue into talking about sort of Ethan Edwards and Nick Blankenberg played well, and Luke Hughes looked great even going forward. And yes, it's Wisconsin, and that does need to be a caveat here, but you know, you have players that can step up and do similar things to Owen Power. Johnson, I don't think is quite as replaceable because you can't go into your depth as, you know, there's a lot more forwards, but they do have other players on the depth lines that are playing that also stepped up this weekend.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of like when you get into a really cold body of water, one limb at a time versus jumping in, that we're easing into having a lot of players that play key roles on the team being removed, instead of just going cold turkey from all together to four
Yeah.
down, we went two down, then we'll do two more down the next week. So, all for easing into pain.
With a sort of a perfectly placed bye week, I think,
Yeah,
because
basically.
you would want this week to be played while you still had Beniers and Brisson, or choose your pronunciation for the weekend. And they both did have good games, I think actually separate games, which was kind of perfect. But then next weekend, Michigan's going to have their bye weekend. So in reality, now they're going to have the better part of 2 weeks to practice the lines that they're going to have, because at this point, they're not going to have a ton of forward depth in terms of extra skaters, because they're going to be missing four forwards. So anyone who's going to be able to skate, unfortunately, Eric Cicilline's still not back, but everyone else will find their spot on the line. And now it's not like, yeah, you can blend your lines as Mel seems to want to do every week or two, but you can find your trio and be able to build some chemistry without actually having to be checked by, a Buckeye or a Nittany Lion or something.
Yeah, and then obviously you can play around a little bit this coming week with the exhibition too.
Right. Well, which is like what going to be basically the day this is released. So, anyway, all right. So the first period was again definitely in Michigan's favor. Mike Pasta got a chance in close, and Brisson and Bortolo being paired together again had a good chance, but a shot hit a body in front. So Michigan's getting chances, and then they get the early goal on a really nice play from Samuskevich in the slot, moving it to the side to Edwards, a guy we talked about who's going to have a few weeks where he can really explode here if he can. And he has a shot. I think it hits the post and comes down behind. At that point, I guess it was Jared Moe, because it seemed like we were going through Wisconsin goalies like Michigan went through Wisconsin offensive linemen in the fall. And Dylan Duke was where he normally is, in and around the crease, getting his stick behind Jared Moe and tapping in a rebound. And that was just a really good sign, because one of the things that we're going to need in the next few weeks is the Beecher and Kids line, which is Beecher plus Samuskevich and Duke. Those are guys that are just now, who were basically the third line, who are probably going to be line one or two at the worst. And getting those players to not only create opportunities, but then get guys like Duke to finish, albeit again Wisconsin, is a good sign going forward, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Duke is going to be asked to really play a pretty notable role here moving forward, and has kind of started to find his spot on the ice around the net and getting those rebound goals. And, he's got the talent to really step up here in terms of being a fourth round pick. He's probably a guy you expect sort of to grow over a several year period, but him and Samuskevich, and obviously Ethan Edwards too. Those are three guys who now have gotten a half season to kind of get a feel for college hockey, and now should be able to really grow a lot as their role increases here moving forward.
And Edwards sort of felt a little power-ish in that sense, where he kind of steps up a little bit from the blue line, receives the pass as to create an open look from Samoskevich, and just gets the puck on net, which is what needed to happen. Now, he almost scored, and he did score the next night, but he just kind of creates the really good look for Duke, who just taps it in. And, you know, Michigan jumped right off of that into Estapa getting a good look from the top of the house and Brisson making a really nice move and getting a chance. So it wasn't just one line. It wasn't just one player, but, you know, Michigan's creating chances. And then even Portillo is making some plays in the back. Wisconsin didn't get much in the first period, according to my notes and from my memory. But he did make a really nice lunging save as they did get one really good chance to Portillo's left as there's a scrum in front. He kind of dives blocker and glove first, getting sort of parts of his big equipment over there and makes a nice save, contributing on the, sort of the one chance that Wisconsin really did have.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about Portillo later on, but his numbers after this weekend continue to be simply astonishingly good since basically the end of the first half, right? Starting at the Michigan Tech shutout, he's been locked down moving forward, yeah. And this was another good week for him.
And the defense has had its lapses at times, not as many times as in the first half, but other than that, the defense as a whole, I think, has played pretty well, not just limiting chances or limiting total attempts, but in giving up grade A chances and allowing Portillo to just use his mountain-esque frame to just make saves and to shield pucks away.
Yeah, well, your best penalty killer is your goalie. So
yeah, there it is. We knew that one was coming. And then we had probably one of the most exciting incidents where I believe it was Blankenberg coming down the left end and gets checked in the corner and the door opens and just blows open where I think it must be one of the players' entrances or they bring the Zamboni.
The Zamboni.
The Zamboni door.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just opens and they have to stop play. I haven't seen that. I mean, I've seen it before, but not very often.
Yeah, it's kind of it was because the play kind of continued for a moment and
right.
People were like, oh, look, the door's open. Maybe Bill Murray's going to come running onto the ice like it's, you know.
That would be, he should like come up through the ice, I think would be the way Jordan goes down into
yeah,
the hole.
Yeah.
And Michigan then gets a power play right at the end of the period after pretty much dominating the first period. And Johnny Beecher gets a great look from the middle of the house and hits the iron, of course, because Beecher just can't buy a goal for anything, it seems like. But then sort of the luck meter swings the other way for Michigan as Bordalo tries to go, I guess it would be a cross slot pass. And his stick gets hit as he's shoot passing it. And the puck then kind of goes off at a weird angle and hits the elbow of a Wisconsin defender and just goes right into the net. So he gets a power play goal, which is good for Bordalo because he hasn't scored a whole lot since he's been back. He's had a couple of assists, but getting him on the score sheet again is another guy who's not going anywhere. He's been, you know, one of Michigan's good, better players, but they're going to need him to live up to, I guess, his potential in the next few weeks because of all the departures.
Yeah, Bordalo is the guy that is really going to be leaned upon. And, you know, you look at his season, I kind of came into the year saying he was going to be a Hobie candidate. And, you know, I think kind of unfortunately for him, Beniers has fully pulled past him, right? Last year, I think they were pretty comparable players, and I think Bordalo led the team in points, as a matter of fact, but Beniers has made another jump, certainly with his shooting and even more involved in the defense and everything else, and Bordalo's kind of gotten lost in the shuffle a little bit, but now is his time to shine.
Yep. So Michigan starts the second period with a kind of a silly trip from Brendan Brisson, who I believe got two or three minor penalties in this game. And I remember last year at the beginning of the year, you and I had started a count of Brisson penalties, especially like offensive zone penalties. And we haven't really seen that a whole lot since probably the first 2 to 3 months of last year, but he did take a couple in this game And Michigan ended up paying for it. And on a goal that we can debate a little bit, there seemed to be a few breakdowns. But the guy comes down, it Bantle, I think is his name, right? Carson Bantle comes down the left boards, and Jimmy Lambert's half tracking him, sort of stops at the goal line as the Badger continues. Blankenberg is kind of with him, but stays above the goal line, and Bantle continues around on a wraparound. Ethan Edwards looks like he's in the middle of the ice with a guy that's posted up in the slot, which is someone needs to be on him anyway. And then Bantle's able to come around and wrap it all the way around Portillo. You mentioned you didn't like that from Portillo. I see where you're coming from in that, and I don't disagree. It also would be nice to have somebody be checking the puck carrier, I believe, on the power play. It seemed like to me that when I watched on a replay that the ideal situation would be to have Blankenberg read that, go to the man in the slot, and have Edwards then step up to the other side. But Blankenberg did not do that. Edwards was late in transitioning, but at that point, Edwards is basically facing a 2-on-1, which is a tough pull, and the puck goes in far side. But you didn't like the Portillo angle on this.
Well, I just, I don't love wraparound goals in general, especially if the goalie gets over and he was able to get over and then he let it in, sort of go far side. It's just kind of tough, but it is the way it is. No, nothing that I'm. It's one of those where you think about a lot of times in how we assess what's a good goal or a bad goal for a goalie to give up. The vast majority of bad goals a goalie gives up, you can also hit some of the defensive players as part of it,
Yeah.
right? Unless it's just an absolute, right, Dan Cloutier letting in the Nicklas Ekstrom goal from center ice type thing. For the most part, there's a few people at fault, and he could have gotten more help, but I also just don't, not a big fan of giving up wraparound goals, especially when you're in position.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would prefer to have him give that up far side than near side because you'd want him to get across, as that is sort of,
Yeah.
his job is to get to the post. I mean, I was
I
always
mean, he
taught as a
beats the
goalie,
puck to the point. It's
right?
just, yeah.
It's just that the guy ends up being able to get out in front. And so when when he gets out in front, it's not even like a true wraparound, right? Like a wraparound is just beating the goalie to the far post. This was almost getting out in front of the crease and then shooting far post, which is kind of a different animal altogether.
Yeah.
So it was just, Michigan's been really good on the penalty kill, especially in the last, 8 or 9 games. This was a lapse. It probably started with a bit of a bad penalty from Brisson to begin with. It also probably was indicative of a 2-0 game and where they could have been 3-4 nothing, and Michigan was basically on the road to steamrolling the Badgers, and this was just sort of a everybody took half the play off, it seemed like.
Yeah, sometimes that happens.
And then probably the biggest save of the weekend for Portillo, as I didn't go back and check this, I did not see whose fault it was, but Erdahl was able to get behind the defense. A guy on, I think it was our sponsor, Michigan Lograd, DM'd me and was like, Edwards was on the ice for it. I did not go back and see if it was his fault, but Erdahl does get in behind the defense, and Portillo comes out and makes a pretty nice, easy save, deflects it to a corner, which at that point it could have been 2-2. And at that point, and then you just don't know, right? Like you're all of a sudden in a 50-50 game after you've been controlling, the crowd's into it. Michigan traditionally, other than, recently because of the talent differential, has not had a lot of success winning games in Madison. So you never really know, but Portillo deflects that to the side, and then Beniers just pulls out some Matty magic going the other way and gets the puck on net after going through about two or three Badgers. Luke Morgan is flying in behind him, the thing that Morgan does the best, and taps it in off of or under Moe's pads as he did not freeze it. He thought he froze it. It looked like it was on his pad, slightly under his pad, somewhere, but it was not. And Morgan is able to poke it free and into the net. And it's 3-1, basically restoring Michigan's multiple goal advantage from the first period.
Yeah, and at that point, with the way Wisconsin was playing in the game, they were clearly the worst team and have not scored much at all this season. You felt pretty good at that point.
Yeah, Michigan gets another power play pretty soon at, well, no, the first thing we should talk about is there was a 5-minute major called on not Michigan, which
Yeah, well,
has that happened this year?
That was an odd thing because you had a big hit in the neutral zone on Marcus Dapa, and
Right.
then Brisson goes after the guy who gave the hit, and then another guy comes after Brisson, and he comes in and hits Brisson in the head. So Brisson gets two for going after the one guy, and then the other guy gets five for going after him, and
And I
kind
think
of,
he hit him in the head. That was clear.
yeah.
So that was a five. Michigan got 2 minutes, so it was a bit of 4-on-4, and then
The old 3-minute power play.
yes, it's like the $2 bill.
Yeah.
And then Michigan has kind of a weird little power play as they get the puck in the zone, and it was at the end of the shift, so Bortolo is leaving the power play once it's set up. Now, that's not something you see a ton, I don't think, where you have everyone set up in the zone on a man advantage, and then one of the guys says, "All right, I'll see you later," and heads to the bench. I mean, there's times when, the puck is being passed around on shifts, and guys at one time or another, when they're not going to be in the play for a while, skate off to replace their guy. But when you have the puck in the zone, that's sort of like the whole goal, right? Is to get in the zone, set up, and create an opportunity. And when a guy leaves, it's a 4-on-4, and all of a sudden now they can match up to everybody. And on his way out, he kind of runs into a Michigan player, falls down, and someone else jumps on the ice. And all of a sudden now it's very clear that Michigan has 6 men on the ice because Bortolo is kind of laying on the ground, and they get their extra skater on, and then, well, there goes the power play.
I didn't fault Beecher for the one coming on in that situation, because the truth is, line changes happen with some degree of trust, right? You hop on the ice trusting that the other guy is there, and you see him skating towards the bench, you get ready to time it up. And the truth is, every time there's a line change, a team has too many men. Thing is, you get a legally defined buffer zone. But what happens when the guy who you're expecting to get into the buffer zone within a second falls over before he gets into the buffer zone?
Skates face first back to the bench.
So, Beecher's coming on. He sees Bortolo skating over. He hops on just like you do a million times. And then, right before Bortolo can get into that legal buffer zone, he falls over. And it's.
Almost Owen Power style from last year,
Yeah.
where
By
he
the
just
way,
sort of
one
go
thing I
ahead.
wanted to point out here, we were talking about the $2 bill and the 3-minute power play. This just came to my mind. Do you remember that 1-point safety in that Kansas State Oregon bowl game like 10 years ago?
I don't. We
Ah,
should.
well,
What is
that's
it?
another one for this category of rare sports events.
I mean, is that
It's
just a miscount?
when you go for two and the defensive team intercepts the ball, takes it out of the end zone, runs it back in, and is tackled for a safety. It's a 1-point safety.
Because they can't do 2 points because that's the same as going the other direction.
Direction, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah,
Man,
so
the more you know, I'll tell you what, this is
I think that's the only one that's happened in my lifetime, but I remember that really clearly, so.
that would happen in what Kansas State against who would you
It
say?
was Oregon. This was like when Kansas State had that really good quarterback, Klein.
Oh yeah,
Colin
in the
Klein.
Fiesta Bowl.
Festival,
Yeah. Okay.
yeah.
Well, one of the teams had to be from the Pac-12 for something like that to happen.
Right.
So then after that, Edwards gets a cross. We were talking about these, the Bortolo fall over, and then Edwards takes a cross check. And what did you think of this? So Edwards gets in the box and he was pretty livid about it and said, the guy just kind of went over. And you see it, and it is a cross check to the back, but the guy kind of folded like a cheap suit, right? I mean, I don't know. I guess it's hard. It's sort of like if you're going 43 miles an hour in a 40, like you're speeding, yeah, but like you're really calling me for going 2 miles an hour or 3 miles an hour over the speed limit. And then the funny thing is, it looked like his head almost hit the boards or did. And so then I'm like, well, gee, now if you want to go by the letter of the law, that might be a 5 minute major.
Yeah, but luckily they didn't do that, so.
Well, which makes me kind of wonder then, so what is it? Like, if it's not a cross check to the back where a guy goes face first into the boards, that's what we were told the week before in Minnesota, which is why, guys are getting thrown out.
It doesn't always have to make sense.
Or it just never makes sense. But so
Sure.
So Wisconsin now has their second power play, and this is a weird one because they start 5-on-4, go to 5-on-3, and then back to 5-on-4, but it still doesn't really matter because their power play isn't a whole, very good anyway. The goal that they got on the first one was because of, you know, about three or four half breakdowns by Michigan players. They don't really set up much. They get a stick tip and then a couple shots sail wide, but nothing overly dangerous. Michigan's able to kill that. And then they go back down to the other end, get into the Wisconsin end. Beecher has the puck along the boards, got a nice pass from Edwards as well again. And Beecher probably had one of the better passes of his career, where he was kind of sitting deep, not quite in the corner, but down near the goal line, found Samo on a really nice hard pass, hit him in the tape, and Samo just sniped it from straight away in the house. And it's 4-1. Mo was chased for the third game in a row. All we saw was Cameron Rowe then from there on out for the rest of the series. And this game was all but put to bed.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it's over. I mean, Wisconsin just doesn't have the firepower this season to mount a comeback in that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to take a Michigan defensive collapse or Portillo just facing the wrong direction for about 20 minutes. Neither of those things happened. The biggest thing of note is that Wisconsin tried to salvage the game in the third by bringing in Robbie Badun to the booth, and he was interviewed about how he used to like Michigan because he played for Michigan Tech, and now he hates Michigan. That is the update on Robbie Badun, although he did win an ECHL Cup last spring.
Apparently he's, what is he now? He's working in the, was it the Rangers analytics department is
That
what he
could be.
said. Who knows how much analytics he's actually doing.
Well, they asked him if it's analytics, and he goes, "Yeah, it's analytics."
Yeah, which that.
What does that mean? I mean, we kind of dabble in analytics for Michigan hockey, and you know, we have no access to any data. So, I mean, right? I mean, that's sort of what the Corsi stuff and
I mean, yeah.
some of that.
Analytics in some NHL front offices is like, how tall is the player we're going to draft?
You always bring up height, Alex. Yeah, the last thing to really mention is that Matty Beniers sort of just puts on a move and a shift as sort of like a remember me on this sort of play, because he makes a really nice pass in the zone to Blankenberg, who returns it really nice, hitting Matty, and Beniers is able to finish, makes it 5-1. My question to you then is, does Beniers get a secondary assist on his own goal?
No.
Oh, I was really hoping. Could you tell?
Yes.
But just the classic Beniers play, and it kind of goes back to what you were talking about when we were comparing him and Bortolo, is that Beniers was a really good player last year and probably could have gone to at least the AHL if not played for the Kraken outright this year. But he has changed one thing more than, or he has improved one major area of his game, and that's his goal scoring. I mean, it's shooting, yes, because we've seen him post up in the on the Brisson dot on the side and take those sort of bombs on the power play. He's had a few little snipes coming in with momentum across the blue line, but he's just finding a lot of different ways to put the puck in the net and to become probably Michigan's best and most well-rounded player on this team.
Yeah, he's gonna be playing for the Kraken very soon. Maybe at the end of the year, possibly next fall, and is just ready for that.
Well, on that note, I think that we'll take a little bit of a break here and get some water, and then we will be back to discuss the second game and what else happened in the Big Ten and take a look at the standings and see how we feel.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458, or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
entrance into the second segment other than like talking about as soon as the first period starts on the Saturday game. I think it was maybe 15 seconds in, somehow Jimmy Lambert is able to take a penalty. Like, he brings a guy down from behind. Like, basically they go up one end of the ice and back down the other, and he like hugs him and gets his like stick in his skates. And I remember Craig saying like, that's a phantom call or whatever. And on the replay, you're like, well, it does kind of hit the guy in the shins. It also looks like the guy went down pretty easily, but like Jambert. Yeah. And well, that's a good name for him, right? Combining Jimmy and Lambert to Jambert. What are you doing? Like, what? This is how you lose these games, is by doing this kind of stuff, especially like as soon as the game starts.
Yeah, I did not see the first period live, but I flipped over about 3 minutes into the first period and Michigan was on the penalty kill, and I was like, wow, that's pretty early.
Did they just like have a technical violation and they had to start on the penalty kill? Like, how does that happen? Wisconsin doesn't do a ton on this power play. Portillo actually plays pretty well, I think, making a number of saves and kind of seeing them through it. As you said earlier in the first segment, the best penalty killer is your goalie. So they get out of that, and then right away we get kind of the power play, from Ethan Edwards, where he he's out of the zone, comes in to keep the puck in the zone, and it's very clearly does not leave, does a really good job of keeping the puck in the zone, and then moves sort of laterally to the side, keeps his head up, no one's in front of him, steps up the ice, again, doesn't have a pass as he's looking for it, steps into the middle, and just shoots as what you would want him to do as he approaches sort of the side of the house, and he picks a corner. So, like, the Ethan Edwards hype that you started in the first half, and I've really picked up on in the last month or so and gone game by game as to what he's done, this is kind of that stuff that, you know, he's moved up to the second pairing because there's no power, so they've made, at least on the pairing charts, they've put Hughes and Triskett as the first pair and then dropped Blankenberg with Edwards, and he has really sort of assumed that role and basically the power role, playing next to Blankenberg, and it pays off pretty much right away.
Yeah, and Ethan Edwards picks up that goal. That's his second goal this season. I didn't realize this until the end of the game, but when you look at the stat sheet, Michigan's gotten a ton of goals from their defensemen. They've already got two in double digits, and those come later in this game from Blankenberg and Hughes, but you also have Edwards. So in this game, you got three goals from your defensemen, and then you total up the sheet, 11 from Blankenberg, 10 from Hughes, 3 from Power, now 2 from Edwards, 1 from Triskott. I mean, you run that math, I mean, that's, you know, close to 30 goals from your defensive core this season in only 29 games. So
Michigan Avalanche.
Yeah, basically.
But, you know, that's kind of where hockey's going, right? Is like the good teams in the NHL get their defensemen activated, move forward, and create offensive mismatches in the zone, and you get goals from back there. And, you know, we talked about how Michigan wasn't getting a ton of scoring from their forward depth of the fourth line for sure, and at the third line at times, although when everyone's there and, you know, the Duke Samo Beecher line has been better as of late, but you don't need it when you got 3 to 4 guys on your defensive core that are creating goals.
Yeah, well, they play a really real role in generating offense.
Mm-hmm. And they should, because look at the guys that we're talking about. I mean, they are, not only are they good scorers, but they're good skaters and they create a ton. I mean, like Hughes, a number of times, and we'll get to the specifics of it, but, you know, once or twice a game, he seems to just get the puck and be like, you know what? Let's just see if anyone can take it from me. And just goes skating through multiple people. And, you know, sometimes it results in a goal. Sometimes he misses something high and he's stuck in the zone and then everybody's got to scurry back. But when you have a guy like that, like, you know, you don't want Cale Makar sitting on the blue line all the time, right? Like, when you have a guy that can skate and has great hands, like, take a shot, man. If you score a goal, I mean, like, that could be the goal that puts the game away or keeps you in it, or, you know, just extends sort of the game longer or whatever. Anyway, and like, there's just no reason to, you know, only bring out your high powered passing offense when you're down by 3 touchdowns. Like, go get a 30 point lead and end the game.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
So it's going to be fun to watch Edwards. I mean, he's going to make mistakes. We see him, you know, he did get that cross check in the previous game. He has been beaten at times in his zone and all that. And that's okay. I mean, that happens when you play a sport, but it's going to be fun as I think he is going to continue to improve and you see little pieces of that. And that's kind of what happened here. The next note I had was just, it doesn't have anything to do with the game, but I thought it was kind of funny as I think Estapa was fed the puck in the neutral zone, sort of backing up towards the center line, and a guy from Wisconsin comes over to just check him, but he picked the wrong guy and just sort of bounced off like a small child would against his older brother. And it's just like, well, yeah, that's what probably what you get when you try to hit Mark Estapa. and then we have one of the Hughes situations, like I just mentioned previously, is he just kind of gets the puck and goes through everyone in the neutral zone, gets deep, has a nice little dish to Dylan Duke in front, and Duke gets his shot, but it gets a good chance from pretty close to the slot, but it's saved, and then gets punched in the face by S, which is not like the letter S with a period, it's ESS, sort of like when you're mocking the SEC chant.
Yes.
See, you rhymed. Good job, Alex. no call on that one, though. So, and that one also sent Craig into a tizzy as he was like, sure, you get a phantom call on Jimmy Lambert, but now you can't get a call with a guy getting punched in the face.
Sometimes that's how it goes.
Yeah, especially when you're already dominating a series. and then more. So then, like, this is, it seems like Michigan just really wants justice for this kind of thing because a similar thing happens to Nolan Moyle as he gains his own, comes down the left. It looks like Michigan's on a change. So there's really no one there. Gets around his defenseman, just starts veering in towards the house area or trying to get in there. And the defenseman from the other side just comes and just slams the door and just rocks him. And Mel is like, all right, that's a major. We're going to review this and call. I'm going to, you know, challenge my timeout. And you know, you just kind of watch it, and it's not even a really highly skilled play. It's just your depth liner trying to get to the front of the net. There's no one else on the rush. He gets blown up. And is there contact to the head? Like, I don't know, maybe a smidge, but, like, that can't be a major. Otherwise, it's like calling holding on every play, right? Like, he didn't mean to hit him in the head. Moyle kind of put his head down, and I don't even know that he clearly did. So it just seems like it's kind of like Michigan is getting all these major calls and is almost attention desperate to get one on the other team.
It does feel that way to some degree.
Especially in these sorts of situations, because you're like, oh, there's a chance for that one.
Right.
Alas, there was not. So Michigan did not have a timeout. Not that, I don't know, how much do you value timeouts in hockey?
Not very much.
Like, just at all.
I mean, they're really only useful when you have that icing late in a game when your guys have been out there already for like 2 minutes.
And so after that, as we start to approach the end of the first period, we get fights because Blankenberg gets, I don't know, wrestled down, I guess, from behind, and the guy kind of grabs him and then throws him into the ground and then like pushes him down, and Moyle takes issue with that, and so does Van Wy, because, you know, well, I've watched this line for a long time. They like to mix it up when possible. Lambert hits a guy, and all of a sudden you've got like a 4v4 going on, because at this point the puck is in the other end. I think it was Ethan Edwards has it, goes back to get it, and then all of a sudden, and the puck and the camera's on him, and he just sort of drops the puck and starts skating up as hard as he can towards center ice, and I was like, well, something's going on because he just abandoned the puck in his own zone. And they pan over and you've got a 4-on-4 going in the neutral zone, which, I mean, Michigan's been involved in how many of these this year? Like 5 or 6 of these?
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, is it just like teams that can't skate and play with Michigan are like, all right, we're going to try to get under their skin?
I would think so, yes. I mean, whenever you don't have sort of those athletes, then you try and assert your, you know, presence more physically.
Wisconsin does get a chance to get back in the game near the end of the first period as Estapa is sort of coming off the bench just after a penalty ends and can't quite play the puck. And Badger guy goes right by him and shoots high, which was close because, you know, it was, again, a period that Michigan was being outshot, but looked to be in control of for the most part. They had gotten the goal. Wisconsin struggles to score. Here's their breakaway with a chance to equalize it, and it doesn't happen. Portillo makes a couple more saves at the end of the first period, and you're kind of thinking, all right, this isn't the best game or period I've seen Michigan play this year, but they still managed to get a lead out of it, get a goal out of it, and kind of surviving that first wave. Because usually in these games where you get a blowout, the other team is like, cattle prodding each other in the locker room, being like, we gotta go, we gotta get them early, we gotta bring the energy. And then if you can survive it, the adrenaline rush goes back down again, and now everybody's sort of playing hockey again.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that for too long, because pretty much as the first period starts, Michigan has just a goofus, to use my favorite Alexander word, play behind their own net. And like Bortolo's coming around behind the net, he hits one of his own defensemen, the puck kind of goes off into a side, it ends up at the point. And the shot comes in. Brisson is trying to block it, gets his stick on it, gets a perfect tip as he like spikes it down into the ice and then rockets it up over Portillo's shoulder. And it's 1-0, and you're just, or 1-1, I should say, they for an equalizer. And it's, I wasn't sure if Portillo could see that, but then when you have the behind the cage view of it, you're like, well, that's just a perfect tip.
Yeah, that happens sometimes where, the defensive player just happens to be in the wrong place and tips it past his own goalie accidentally. And that sort of stuff is why it's really bad that the NCAA tournament is single elimination.
That is a perfect description there. I want to give Brisson credit for this though, because this is he is a shooter and he is definitely an offensive forward, but to see a guy like that back blocking shots kind of builds on the point that you've made over the course of the year, where he's become more than just a shooter. Then, he's not just Nick Stauskas in the beginning of his career. He's sort of become a full length defender. I mean, we've seen Bortolo playing on the penalty kill too. So, like, you get these guys that are really good in the offensive end, but they're also contributing on the defensive end. And in this case, it went against him. But you don't see a lot of best shooters on hockey teams back blocking a bunch of shots.
No, typically not, but when you're getting in, later into the season, you want to see everybody laying out to block shots in big moments.
Correct. And then comes the Oof Portillo section of the hockey cast where, within a minute or two of this goal, I think, because as I was getting my note set and getting the tweet out to alert my seven followers as to who is what's going on in the hockey game, you hear this like yell, and Wisconsin has scored again. Oh, geez, what happened? So you look up, and I was watching the replay, and so the Badger enters the zone, and again, the camera right behind Portillo serves well here too, as you can see him move to the side of the Michigan defender and kind of shoot from a distance. And Portillo looks like he was, I don't know if he's not paying attention or not expecting a shot so early, but kind of like jump lunges with his blocker at an awkward angle, trying to like whack it to the side or something, and just completely fans on it like it's a curve ball and he's Pedro Serrano. And the puck just goes underneath him and under the bar and in, and it's 2-1 on. I guess I don't really know what else to say about that. Just looked like a swing and a miss.
Yeah, not good. The Wisconsin player is in nowhere near a dangerous position. I mean, he's entering maybe 2-on-3 with plenty
Yeah.
of defenders in front of him, and the defenders are protecting high danger areas, and it's a shot from way out, and it's not exactly Steve Yzerman against the Blues in Game 7 when it comes to shot quality. And Portillo just misses it. So,
And there's probably as an argument somewhere that he'd be saying, I wasn't even trying to shoot. I was just dumping the puck in.
yeah, I mean,
Maybe,
it
maybe.
was definitely not what you want to see from a goaltender.
And again, while you're kind of organizing that goal and getting that set up and noting it down, it's now all of a sudden Michigan has tied it the other way. And, we're what, 3, 4 minutes into the game and, or in the second period, and it's all of a sudden 2-2 after a pretty low scoring chanced first period. This is this was actually a really nice play by Keaton Pearson, who, you know, is probably one of the defensemen we talk about the least, especially in terms of offensive play. But he carries the puck in, gets behind the net, gets deep below the goal line, drawing defensive action, and get the puck then gets through a badger to Mike Pasta, who's sitting not in a great shooting opportunity, but above the goal line to the side of the goal. And Philip Lapointe, who's playing in this game, comes flying into the slot. Pasta feeds him, and he one times it into the net. And this is, you know, to make it 2-2. And this is another guy that I made a note of in the breakdown of, like, these are guys that you want to see scoring and contributing, because for four games at least, and we're not sure about the Notre Dame series, but at least for four games, Michigan is going to need contributions like this. And they don't always have to be goals, but there have to be chances and drawing attention and, you know, maybe getting a penalty here or there. But a really nice play from Lapointe to just crash the net, do the fundamental thing, and he was rewarded for it.
Well, I think that the best play on this play is from Michael Pastajov, because, you know, obviously Keaton Pearson brings it in and brings it below the goal line, but he loses control of it, and Pasta wins the battle. He ties up his man, uses the body to get positioning, and then makes the pass right into the slot. And the funny thing about this goal is that it's almost identical in some ways, very similar play to an eventual game-winning goal in the other game I was watching that night, which was Red Wings Maple Leafs on Hockey Night in Canada. John Tavares made a very similar play where you use the body, you box out the defender, tie up the defender, you know, shield the puck, get your stick on it, and then happen to have the vision to see the open player slashing down. And in this case, you know, Lapointe was the Sandin in this play. Great pass, great finish. Again, just a really strong physical play from Mike Pasta on the forecheck.
Yep. And right after that, I wrote down that Wisconsin had the slowest 3-on-2 rush of all time, where you get three guys kind of coming up the ice. And I was, you know, because you're always sort of debating on some of these when there's, you know, a lot of players involved. Is this an odd man rush? Is there an actually advantage? A lot of times I don't count it unless either A, one of the guys that is being used in the rush clearly does not have someone on him. Like if you don't use your third, if you're on a 3-on-2 and the defenseman basically take two guys, but the puck never gets to the third guy and he's completely irrelevant, like it's hard to call that as an odd man rush because there's no advantage being used. But in this case, it just was so slow developing that I almost wrote it off two or three times. But eventually the puck made its way to the third person and he kind of like half swung and barely got the puck on net. And Portillo's just sort of waiting for it. It was sort of like if you just watched it in slow motion and all of a sudden, like everybody, the puck just moves and then there's a save and it's like, oh, but it's not really relevant. I found it funny and I felt like you needed to hear about it. No? Okay. So it's 2-on-2. Wisconsin has their slow motion rush. And then you get a nice play from Jimmy Lambert, who's sort of in that Philip Lapointe category, except he plays more. He enters the zone again, so a little like the Edwards play in the first period, where he enters a zone. He's like, all right, I got to get across the zone. No one picks me up. Okay, I'm just going to wait and look for a pass. Still no one picks me up. I guess I'll crash in that a little bit. Walks into the slot. No one picks him up, and he's like inside the Dots house approaching the slot, shoots, and now you understand why Cameron Rowe's save percentage is so low, because this one just kind of hits him like sort of in the glove or the wrist. It looks like he misses by a good 4 to 8 inches and bounces down and into the net. And it's 3-2 Michigan on, you know, a nice play from Jimmy Lambert. But, you know, if that's Portillo, we're kind of like,
It's also the defenseman let him walk in way too close. And then they screen their own goalie. I mean, not great.
Yeah. Fundamentals, got a bit lost there on everybody's part, it seemed like. But again, now Michigan has a disastrous start to this period, is down 2-1 in a game that they were playing well or in control of. And then within minutes, they're back in the lead 3-2. And I, you know, try to make bullet point notes here. And in the first five notes that I have written down, four of them are goals. So
yeah, it was a busy, busy little.
It was a very busy few minutes, so it's 3-2, and then you see a really nice play from Thomas Bortolo, who has the puck near the dot in the offensive zone, makes a little sort of quick start move where he moves the puck around a moving Badger defenseman, has open space, and hits Brisson in the slot, who sort of has his back to goal, receives the pass, does sort of a spinorama shot after turning, and he fires it off of the defenseman who is now diving in front of him. It hits him and flutters up and over into the net past Rowe. I don't really fault Rowe for that one, because anytime the puck is going to hit something in front and completely change speeds and direction, it's just impossible. But I guess when you're giving up chances like that, some of them are going to go in, and it's 4-2 Michigan in a game that the Badgers had completely come back and taken the lead, and now we're down plural goals.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, again, you're just like in the previous game, when you take that 2-goal lead in the second period, you're feeling pretty good about it overall. And you know, the rest of the way, Wisconsin gets some chances, but Michigan is, you know, they're on the power play a decent bit too, and it never really felt super close again after that, at least to me.
No, that you were right. They did hit two posts late in the period, so this wasn't Michigan's best defensive period. They seem to have those from time to time. It's not always like a game where you're like, oh, that's some terrible defense for the whole game. Yeah. This was mostly packed into one period where, you know, and when you look at it in context, they'd just blown out Wisconsin before. The only way they lost to them in the previous game at Yost was some just dreadful giveaways from a number of different players. And they're in control of this game. It seems like the light kind of flickers for a little bit. Wisconsin jumps on it, and then Michigan realizes, oh, nope, sorry, we're not doing that. You know, what they've had kind of collapses before earlier in this year, in last year, where they're just kind of letdown games. And this is sort of the maturity of this team showing up and saying, oh, you know, all right, yeah, we stumbled there for a little bit, but now it's time to end this. And they went up 4-2. Got a break or two on these posts, and pretty much never looked back. Like you said, they had some chances on the power play. They didn't actually get their first power play until the very end of the second period. And, you know, for a couple of the cheapies that were taken earlier, you just sometimes wonder with some of the reffing, you know, are they trying to just keep this a game a little bit longer from time to time?
Yeah, you never know.
Yep. So we get into the third period. It's 4-2. And there's just not a lot of things. Michigan has, there are some power plays. Lambert gets a hooking call, I think, and Wisconsin gets their third, but nothing really of note on that. Blankenberg gets taken down, and now Michigan's on a power play. I think the one of the biggest things on this one was Hughes hit his own post. Do you remember that, where he's like passing, he has the puck on a breakout, and he's like, I don't know if he's passing it to Portillo or something on the side along his goal line, but the puck somehow gets through Portillo and hits the side of the post, and they have to recover it. And I, you know, it's just like every once in a while that happens in your own defensive end where everyone isn't on the same page, but it's sort of like the things we're talking about of just, yeah, we're in control of this game. We're kind of having fun, and whoa, we almost scored on ourselves.
Yeah, again, hockey is hockey, so sometimes you get weird stuff like that.
Yeah, they did get a 4-on-2 where you had Jimmy Lambert make another really nice play. It was nice to see him make a couple of good plays in the offensive zone here. Had a great diagonal pass to Moyle, backdoor on a 4-on-2. Moyle didn't finish it, didn't really hit the puck too much. They were actually the two guys on that 2-on-0 against Penn State a couple weeks ago, right? Were they on that shorthanded goal? And they almost collaborated here for one, but Moyle couldn't finish this one. It's still 4-2. You're feeling pretty good, like you said. And then you get a weird situation where there are just a number of different calls. A stopper gets called for a tripping. Somebody triggers Thomas Bortolo, which is about 11 and a half minutes to go, and he gets a 10-minute misconduct.
So what happened there is Estapa trips the guy. Estapa's is – the whistle blows. I believe Bortolo touches up. the puck filters into the neutral zone where Estapa is playing it. Ryder Donovan comes up and basically tries to just take the puck from Estapa, even though the play is dead, whistle has blown, and Estapa then kind of gives him a shove, and then Bortolo comes flying up out of nowhere. And this is something, I don't remember if we were talking about this on the show or just not on air, but we were discussing this at some point in the last couple weeks. But if you remember the old NHL video games, at least the ones I played in the late 2000s, the way you would always trigger a brawl, like a line brawl, is after the whistle blew, if you took a shot on net or kept
playing the
puck. Like that's, it's sort of like after the whistle blows, whoever is skating with the puck is just, that's the end of it. And if you come up and do something that sort of makes it seem like you think the game is still going on, that's like the ultimate sign of disrespect. And so Donovan coming up and trying to steal the puck from Estapa like 10 seconds after the whistle blew, it, you know, to some is like, hey, what are you doing? The whistle's over. Like, you know, the play is done. Like, you know, why are you taking the puck from me when the play is done? And obviously it's a little bit of an overreaction from Bortolo, but that is generally like, again, if you come in off sides and you still take a shot on the goalie, like someone's going to come up and, you know,
well, that's a dangerous play because you're shooting a hard object at a guy who may not be ready for it and you could catch him off guard.
It's one of those unwritten rules of sorts that when the whistle blows, the play is over, and coming up to steal the puck from an opposing player is just kind of like a dick move, right? Like you don't do that. And I think Bortolo felt that as one of the leaders of the team that he needed to go in there. But what's weird for me is that he doesn't do anything, that he comes, you know, charging up, but it's not like a line brawl started. Like the referee managed to grab him and restrain him before anything happened. So I don't understand what the misconduct was for, unless something was said during that little period where him and Donovan were really face to face and were jawing at each other. Because the referees did their job in terms of managing the game, right? They avoided the confrontation. They got involved before something happened. So I don't understand the need for discipline there.
It seems to me sometimes that Michigan can be easily triggered. Because like if you're approaching this game, like we used to play, you know, IM games years ago when, you know, we'd be blowing out a team and then the team would just get like angry and snippy and stuff. And there were a couple of players on our team that would always yap back and stuff. And I just go over to them a lot of times and be like, look, you have a lot more to lose than this clown over here. Because if you yap back, you know, you get thrown out of or suspended or, you know, get some sort of red card or something in this game, it might affect our next game. They don't have a next game. And that guy doesn't care. He's going to go back and probably get drunk or do whatever he's going to do the rest of the night and have a good time. And you're going to miss like our semifinal game or something. And while it doesn't really matter in this game, it seems like that's the kind of thing that, you know, once you reach the NCAA tournament or the Big Ten tournament, or maybe that Notre Dame series where Michigan might be trying to win the Big Ten, you know, you just can't sometimes have those reactions. Cause like, you know, we talked about it. Michigan's been in these games against Ohio State, against Wisconsin, or Penn State did that a couple of times, even in, I think it was in Happy Valley, where Michigan's just the better team and you got, you know, 15 minutes to kill. And the other team's like, ah, screw it. Like, let's just see if we can take some of these guys down.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. You definitely don't want that sort of confrontation going on in a game that really matters. And at that point, the game was functionally over.
Yeah. And it was over pretty much right after that, where you had like the Hughes play, right? Where Michigan kind of has a 3-on-2 and Samuskevich makes a really nice pass off the boards to hit Hughes in front of the net. Or I'm sorry, not in front of the net. Pretty much near the top of the house. The funny thing about this is that the Wisconsin defenseman gets so far out of the way that even if Hughes like disappears from the face of the earth momentarily, Johnny Beecher is like right on the other side of him to accept the pass and also walk in alone. So you have two guys that are essentially going to come in on breakaways, even though technically if you count the numbers, it's probably a 3-on-2. And Hughes comes in and just has a really filthy finish with his hands as he just like flies in and all of a sudden the puck is behind road before anyone really realized what had happened. And pretty much ending the game, making it 5-2. But like I said, like, you also have Beecher there. So I don't know where the Wisconsin Badgers were playing. Somebody like asked me about that. They added me on Twitter about it. Like, you know, what was Wisconsin doing? And I said, yeah, that's the point of this series, more or less.
Pretty much.
And it just doesn't end there. Like, this is the kind of thing. Like, so Garrett Van Wye then goes to the net, like, with a few minutes to go, and him and Cameron Rowe kind of get in a shoving match. And you're just sort of waiting for another fight to break out. The puck ends up getting out of the zone, and Van Wye gets in then on a breakaway, and the trailing Badger defenseman, if you watch the replay, just winds up with his stick and just like I said, he wasn't even slashed. Like, call him for slashing, but that's like an assault. I mean, like, it was, if it would have been on the knee, he would have been Kerrigan, right? Like, so the shot is saved, and he goes into the boards, and there's another, like, everyone's got to fight and scrap and yell. It's like 5-2. Michigan's on a power play at the end of the game, and Blankenberg pokes the puck in, and Michigan gets a power play goal on the day. But, and so it ends up being finishing 6-2. It's just kind of like, I guess, yeah, if you finish strong in these situations, you just don't want a guy getting suspended or hurt or some dumb thing happening, especially against a team that, you know, for the most part, doesn't have a lot to play for left this year.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good thing the game ended when it did.
Yeah, and it might have been okay if it ended about 15 minutes earlier, too, in some of those situations. So a good weekend in Madison for Michigan. Michigan even got some help from around the Big Ten as we begin our little part of scanning what else happened within the conference. Friday night was not as kind to Notre Dame and Michigan as, you know, we watched that game together, and we had it set up, and we're like, okay, this is going to be fun. And, you know, you go to get a drink, or you write down a few notes, and it's 3-0 Minnesota. And you're like, well, I don't see Notre Dame coming back in this one. And they did not. It was 5-1. But I did watch, and I think you watched some of the Saturday game too, that Notre Dame held a 2-0 lead, hung on through a period in the second where Minnesota probably arguably could have, should have taken the lead. They did not. Notre Dame does give up a second goal, gets to overtime, and wins it. So Minnesota does drop 2 points in their last chance to get a sweep. They only get 4, which is pretty good in general, but given where they are in the standings, which we'll touch on in just a bit, it puts them in kind of a tough spot now, I think.
You know, I wanted a 3-3 weekend from those two teams. We got 4-2 in favor of Notre Dame. So, not quite what you wanted, but still not bad. And it was good for, Minnesota to be able to, for Notre Dame rather, to pull one out there in the Saturday game. But you look at the standings now with those two teams and sort of where they are and where Michigan is, where Ohio State is, and there's definitely the temptation to say it's now a 2-horse race, but Minnesota is 8 points behind Michigan. They have 2 games in hand. Ohio State's 2 points behind with the same number of games played. Notre Dame is 13 points behind with 2 games in hand. So Notre Dame is still a ways back, but, you know, Notre Dame plays Michigan. If they somehow could get a sweep in that one, and you look at the rest of their schedule, right? Penn State, Wisconsin, and MSU are their 3 series leading up to Michigan. It's not inconceivable that Notre Dame could make a hard charge while Minnesota and Michigan, you know, are shorthanded for those couple weeks. So I think this is still a battle. Minnesota is going to be hurt by the Olympics, but, you know, they play MSU and Penn State as 2 of their 3 weekends in there, and they'll still have plenty of talent on their team. I mean, this is not over by any means. This is still a competitive fight all the way around between these 4 teams, and Michigan needs to keep playing well.
Well, and during Michigan's bye week, it's the week of ease, I guess, if you want to call it that, for each of the other 3 teams, because they all host a series and they all host a team that is in the bottom 3 spots, as Ohio State hosts Wisconsin, Minnesota hosts Michigan State, and Notre Dame hosts Penn State. So if there's a weekend where any of these teams is going to, you know, be favored to get a sweep, it's probably going to be this weekend, because those probably your best odds. I would say maybe Ohio State has the best chance, although, you know, I don't know. The Michigan State, it's just so weird, right? Like, watching them play. Like, I know you've talked about how, you know, poor they've been and everything. It's just, does that style just not like give you the creeps at times where you just feel like, man, you could just get goalied and lose 1-0 or 2-1?
I mean, maybe, but like MSU isn't even doing it, you know, as well as they they once were. Like, they gave up 10 goals to Michigan in the two games combined when they saw Michigan. And, you know, they did beat Ohio State 2-1, I guess. But, like, they lost 4-1 and 6-3 to Minnesota when they played them back in early January. And, I mean, they did beat Notre Dame 1-0. So, like, it's conceivable, but I don't know. Like, the thing is, any team can goalie any other team. And so I don't know who I'd rather face between Wisconsin and Michigan State. Both are bad, though. That's kind of like the underlying point.
So given the spots in the standings, you know, Michigan 39, Ohio State 37, Minnesota 31, Notre Dame 26, who would you want to be? I mean, if you could pick with the upcoming schedules and, you know, which if you're losing players to the Olympics, but then you're also at that particular point in the standings, I mean, I think, would you rather be Ohio State than Michigan?
You know, I
it's right on a knife's edge. I mean, you host Wisconsin, so you like those odds. You host going to be a gutted Minnesota team. That's not bad. But then you also have to go to Yost. And, you know, we saw Michigan play Ohio State in December.
So here's my thought. It to me really hinges on, I mean, obviously the head-to-head, but what Ohio State does that weekend of February 11th and 12th, to me is the big one. Because if Michigan sweeps MSU and Ohio State splits with Minnesota,
yes,
it doesn't really matter what Ohio State does this coming weekend. So let's say Ohio State sweeps Wisconsin, but then they split with Minnesota. Michigan obviously doesn't play this weekend, but then sweeps Michigan State. You would enter that final weekend for Ohio State at 46 points with 22 games played. Michigan would enter with 45 points and 20 games played.
Right.
Meaning that if Michigan simply split with Ohio State, they would exit the weekend 1 point down with two games in hand,
yep,
going into Notre Dame and then maybe getting the whole team back. At which point, the only way Michigan loses the conference is if they get swept in regulation.
Right. And
so,
I mean, I've watched Notre Dame. I watched a lot of that series. Notre Dame has some talent, and, you know, Bischel played, I thought, pretty well, preserving points against Minnesota. But
if you go into that final weekend and all Michigan needs is 2 points to win outright, 1 point to tie against Notre Dame, like, that's the best you can ask for given the Olympics and everything else, to me.
Yeah, the wild card really is, does Michigan get all four of those guys back for Notre Dame? Because it feels like if they get all four of those guys back for Notre Dame and no one's suspended or hurt or all things are being equal, like, it's tough for me to see Michigan not getting at least 3 points that weekend.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And that's where, and honestly, I have a little bit more faith in the players of Michigan and, you know, the discipline in the different areas on the team, even though they're going to lose some of their high end talent. It seems like, I mean, Michigan still has a lot of talent there. It's all young, pretty much. It's, you know, basically a bunch of freshmen and then, you know, a couple of interesting seniors in Pasta, who had that nice play and has had moments in his career. And then, you know, Johnny Beecher, who, you know, while he can't buy a bucket, to quote NBA Jam, he is dishing the puck better. He's playing hard. You know, he's doing all the things you want to see him do. You know, it's not like they're just going to be depending on Marcus Stoppa to get a hat trick in every game.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at Minnesota here, they're at 31 with 16 games played. If we're saying they're splitting with Ohio State, then, you know, maybe they can sweep Michigan State, but let's say they drop points probably to Penn State too, then, you know, they're a factor. They finish with Wisconsin. I mean, it's tough to game out, but I like it. It's still too early is what I would say. But for Michigan, the big objectives are sweeping that MSU game series and then hoping you get help in other weekends when it's realistic.
Yeah, I think that the way that everything currently has shaped up right now, I still like Michigan spot because they are going to host the series against Ohio State. They get to play Michigan State, who, you know, you've repeatedly stated of how they're not very good. And then they go to Notre Dame, a place they've had success, theoretically getting their entire team back. So none of those weekends looks overly daunting. You know, the Ohio State series is going to be big, but, you know, hey, you know, there are other sports where, you know, you got to beat the Buckeyes if you want to win the title.
Yeah. And again, gaming out the Notre Dame scenario with their three weekends, Penn State, Wisconsin, MSU, if they went 15 out of 18 points in those six games, that would leave them with 41 points entering the final weekend, at which point they would still be quite far behind Michigan if Michigan takes three out of four.
Yeah.
No, If Notre Dame, let's say, sweeps this weekend, they're still 7 points back with the same number of games played. And then if over the course of a couple weekends, you know, they win three out of four and Michigan wins three out of four, then they're still 7 points behind.
Yeah.
And then they would be playing Michigan two games. They wouldn't mathematically be able to catch up. So they're in a tough spot. They've got an easier schedule, but they're in a tough spot. And then Minnesota's got their own complications, so it's pretty early. One thing we do know for sure, though, is that Michigan has clinched a top four seed in the Big Ten, or a top four finish in the Big Ten standings.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
They are guaranteed home ice for the first round.
They're guaranteed another game at Yost after the Ohio State series.
Yes, whether it's in the semifinals as the first game or a quarterfinal series.
All right. Well, that is pretty much everything that we have for you. Do you have anything, any parting words that you have before? I don't know. Have you decided, are we going to do one next week? There's not really going to be a whole lot of Michigan hockey to talk about.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure. We'll see.
If we can scrap together enough things. Otherwise, we may see you on the other side of the Sparty series.
The one thing I will say, Eric Portillo, since Christmas, 9.53 save percentage with a 1.54 goals against average. He's now up to 9.26 on the season. My bold prediction in the preseason was that he would finish with a better save percentage than Strauss Mann did last year. That one looked pretty dicey for a while, but if you now actually look at the numbers, there is a shot. Portillo or Strauss Mann last season finished with a 9.30, so Portillo is creeping up pretty fast.
9.53 in his last nine games. How many times out of 10 do you not take that?
I don't know, the one
zero?
Where...
I'll go with zero.
The one where you can get, like, a various NHL Hall of Famer to be your goalie, but...
Okay, or two. Just put two of them in net.
Yeah. Or just play with the defenseman also in the net.
Like Michigan
there.
State.
For listening to Michigan HockeyCast 4.15 for Alex Drian, David Nasternak. Come back next week or not. Maybe it'll be the next week after that, but there will be a future episode, and we hope we'll see you there.